Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we grapple with in this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Tyler.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing quite well. Thank you for asking. And yourself?
I'm doing pretty well. And I'm running around here today, but we're doing good.
Don't you think that's an interesting tradition of how are you doing today? Quite fine, thank you. And yourself?
Well, you know, I've gotten in the habit of sometimes when I'm not doing good, though, I have no qualms whatsoever saying not good. I think it surprises people sometimes.
But does it hurt your feelings if they just say, oh, okay, as if, because they're not listening anyway?
I think sometimes people are like, okay, and they don't really know what to do with that information.
Right, right. Well, I think that, you know, the idea of greetings and how we connect with other people and our social norms around our social interactions are really fascinating. And I think that we don't pay enough attention to the impact that even just brief social interactions have on other people's experience, our own experience, like just a short recognizing someone in the line behind you and saying, hey, where'd you find, you know, that box of cereal? And that, like, you can change the whole course of someone's life just by stopping down a little bit and saying, hey, I see you.
I think it surprises people definitely out here being from the South, and I'll go out people and they're like, have you ever met a stranger? And it's like commenting and acknowledging other people's presence around you is a big deal in my life, especially.
I think it's really important, and it kind of dovetails into today's topic because we're going to talk about naming and how important our names are to ourselves and to the parents naming children, kind of the legacies of family, our sense of status or belonging to our community, to our family, to the world at large. And the idea that, you know, the power of our names can either help to lift us, right, to bring us a real sense of foundation in our sense of self in the world, or it can also be a source of ridicule. Mm-hmm. So when you were growing up, was Tyler...
Tyler,
neutral or
Tyler was fine. I was going to be Tyler, a girl or a guy. Okay. Avery is my middle name, named after my grandfather. And then, but my last name is Pratt. And in the third grade, someone added an extra hump to the P and made it Tyler Bratt. And instead of just embracing it, of course, I made a huge deal. It was really upset, which brought even more attention to it. And then I was Tyler Bratt for a very long time.
Because it got the attention that people wanted.
Of the name calling that occurred in my life, though, that was on the lower.
Like you wish they had stayed with Brat.
Right, exactly.
Like, just let's go back to calling me Brat. That would be much easier.
Exactly.
And were you born in Texas?
It was. I was born in Abilene, Texas.
So do your parents fans of Tyler, Texas?
I believe so. There's a Tyler, Texas Rose. So yeah, that was part of the name.
This is just a side note story. When my husband and I were dating and he worked in East Texas, very close to Tyler, Texas. And Tyler, Texas is the home of all the roses that are used for the Rose Parade, which is kind of their claim to fame. But it's still just this tiny, tiny little town.
Sure is.
But every time I hear the name Tyler, and ever since I met you, I always like completely right back there in Tyler, in this little tiny place in East Texas.
You know, what's funny about Tyler is that we, Tylers get confused with Trevors and Taylors all the time. And I meet Taylors all the time that are girl Taylors. But my bully when I was in high school was a Taylor guy. And so now I'm always like a little distrusting of Taylors when I meet them because it's lasted a lifetime.
Yes. And that's really interesting as well that I can still remember. And I don't know if this is a universal term. I'll just throw it out and you can tell me if it's generationally common. But the girl who had cooties in first grade, do you know what I mean by that? Is that still okay? Her name was Judy. Mm-hmm. And so for my entire...
It was Judy Cooties.
Yeah. She was Judy Cooties. And I just felt so bad. You know, at the time, I was glad it wasn't me, right, that had cooties. But that name, every time I hear it, it could be the nicest Judy in the world, but it's always tainted for me because of that.
Kids, you know, they're grasping at straws when they're younger. So your name, I guess, can do a lot when you're younger.
Absolutely. Well, and it carries in to adulthood. You know, there's a lot of ego that is attached to names and this idea of having to name things and brand things. I mean, we kind of see that in the current political world right now of having someone needing to name things after them and have their name plastered up on the side of a building. And you know, there's a lot of academic back and forth about the idea behind this. You know, the women who are the keepers of birth and death and can actually make human life don't tend to have that need or desire to brand things or to name things after themselves, because just built into the inherent being of women is that sacred experience of making humans. But the thought is that men, because they don't have any actual tangible grounding presence or reason on the planet, that there is this overwhelming desire to brand things or name things after themselves so that they feel that they have some purpose or sense of being or that they matter.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Did you wear a belt with your name on it?
I won a roping competition when I was younger, and so I had a belt buckle that had Tyler on it that I think is around in my parents' house somewhere that I still, you know, want to find a reason to wear like that in my boots. I can't get rid of.
Yeah, there's something really, you know, something that connects us to our history and to the sense of who we are by those things that carry our name or that are, you know, special to the memory of who we were. I have. This is an embarrassing story. I wasn't going to tell it, but it just seems so apropos. But when I was in third grade, one of the girls in our third grade class, her mom was really into pottery. And so for everyone's birthday, she was making, you know, names out of pottery. So and like putting on a board and putting your name on this. And I wanted one of those so badly, but this girl wasn't in my friend group at all. And I probably was kind of mean to her, but I invited her to my third grade birthday party so I could have that pottery name. And I came across it this summer when I was doing my Marie Kondo of my house. And it's one of the things I didn't throw away. I actually put it back out because the just seeing that made me feel like a kid again. The shame of how I got this didn't seem to bother me, but I really love the actual piece of art.
You know, what thinking about that, and then I'll let you get on to what your subject matter is, but I keep seeing there's this trend of keychains all around that have everyone, and this has always been a thing, have your name on it, but I keep seeing the same kind in every convenience store I go into, and you always look to see if your name's on there, but how do they decide what the selection of names that will end up on those keychains will be, I wonder.
So. I know, that would be something worth Googling to find out, because I remember going in and just frantically looking to see if my name was there, and Elizabeth was clearly too long for any sort of ID. And then my older daughter, Kirsten, her name was not traditional in any way. It wasn't Kristen, it wasn't Kirsten. And so she was always heartsick that she could never find her name somewhere. So yeah, it's interesting, all those stories that are wrapped up around our names and how we feel about it. So that's what I thought would be interesting today, that kind of this three-part naming conversation. And we'll be opening up the phone lines rather early today because I love hearing origin stories of people's names. How did their parents come up with that name? Why is it special to them? What is the meaning? So I want to definitely talk about that. But I also want to suggest something that I want you to just chew on. You know, you can call, I hope you'll call in and want to talk about it, but just grapple with it for a second before you completely, you know, just push it aside. But I have this theory that we're kind of past the tradition of naming children patrilineally after fathers, using the surname of the fathers to name children. You know, this has actually been going on. It's not a forever habit. It's not something that's been traditionally since the beginning of time. It actually started in France during the Romantic era, that we passed along surnames from family to family, and that families would have the same surname that would help them kind of build wealth and take over land. So it's not been forever that we identified our family or our kinship group that way. And the understanding, which makes sense, is that when women and children were chattel of the man, then they all had his last name, and that kind of kept the lineage going and kind of denoted his property and was loyalty to him as the lord of the family. So that's kind of how things passed along. But then there's other evolutionary ideas about utilizing surnames. One was to help fathers feel compelled or connected to care for and watch over the children that were his. And so by having that name, they would feel more connected to and responsible to. And going along with that, you know, there's some research that shows that a lot of babies are born looking more like their paternal side of the family, which is some evolutionary way of getting fathers to bond with their children. But as we've moved into the 21st century, from a clinical standpoint, it's hard for me to justify just continuing to name children after the father for a couple reasons. One, 40% of children born today are born to single women, unmarried women. And so those children either take their mother's name, that really only happens 4% of the time, or they take the father's name, even if the father isn't involved in the child's life, which doesn't seem, you know, like a problem at the beginning of the story. But we also have a high rate of divorce. You know, it's lower than or it used to be. It's around 39% across all socioeconomic statuses and level socioeconomic and educational levels. But it's 51% divorce rate for those with lower socioeconomic status and lower levels of education. So more children are born to unmarried women who lack a college education. If a child is born to a woman who lacks an education and access to socioeconomic resources, they have 7 times more likely a chance of ending up in poverty. That's just kind of a side note. But the likelihood of that woman having children with more than one man increases the likelihood that the children born to that woman are going to have different last names, different surnames. And just from a clinical standpoint, what we understand about children is that they really identify strongly to their connection to their name. From the time they start preschool, you know, we start having them draw a picture of your family and name everyone in your family. And here's grandma and grandpa and my dog and my aunt and my uncle, my mom and dad. You know, the idea of their name, first thing children learn to do is write their name. That connection to themselves, their name, their identity, and then the people that they're closely related to really impacts their sense of mental health and well-being, that sense of belonging. And so some research has shown that when children, sibling groups all have different last names, it can actually keep them from feeling bonded. It makes them difficult for the family to feel connected. And also when they go to school and they're not recognized as being a sibling group, that can cause, you know, feelings of being isolated or alienated. So I want to throw that out there as well. Like, why do we still name patrilineally if more children are being, you know, raised by a single woman? Shouldn't they just have their mother's last name? So it doesn't matter if their children are born to different men. All of the children in the sibling group will have the same last name. And then having said that, though, how would you feel about taking your wife's last name or letting go of your surname? Are you attached to that? When my husband and I got married 35 years ago, you know, things, we had just kind of burst out of the feminist movement, and a lot of my friends started keeping their surname and their children took their husband's name, and that kind of became a little more common. Some of our friends hyphenated their last name. Only 1% of families do that now. We thought about it for a second, but it made our last name so long that it was untenable. And then there were a few of our friends that actually took their wife's surname. But I don't know if I'm a traditionalist or it never occurred to me, obviously, at that time, that I would keep my maiden name, that I was kind of happy to take my husband's last name and start this family and kind of follow that patrilineal path. But then years later, you know, I wonder how important it was to keep that name. And we had 2 daughters. And our oldest daughter got married, and now she's taken her husband's last name. And so that surname doesn't seem to have as much impact as actually the girl's first and middle names. So here's where I am today. I would love to find out the origin of your name. Where did it come from? How were you named? Or how did you choose the name of your children? And what do you think about this idea of naming children matrilineally after the mothers instead of the fathers? I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can be part of our conversation by giving us a call at 805-781-3875. You can also find me on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. Send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Follow us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. You can listen to previous shows by visiting kcbx.org and look under the News Talk tab. And you can podcast our shows to listen at your convenience. Just go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. Look up A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Hit subscribe. Leave a review. And the shows will be there when you're ready to listen. So I'm looking forward to hearing your story. What's in your name? Thank you for listening and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be right back. It takes a judge to get married. It takes a judge to get divorced. Well, the last couple of years, spent a lot of time in court. Got my name changed back. Yeah, yeah. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. What does your name mean to you? Where did your name come from? You know, Tyler, I don't know your biblical studying, but did you know Adam, which means earth, according to the Bible, called his wife Eve because she was the mother of all living things?
I think I knew that.
I didn't know that until today. And also, according to the Bible, even though I didn't do a deep dive, but there was some research kind of starting with the naming process, this said the Bible states that one of the very first acts of free will exercised by man was the act of naming.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And our names are supposed to traditionally reflect the hopes and dreams of parents for their children. You know, the ideals of who they hope they'll become and the hopes they have for their family structure in the future. Our names reflect the values not only of our parents, though, but also the cultures and societies that are formed around them. And so there's, you know, traditional names that kind of reflect different regions of the world. And when you hear that name first or surname, that you instantly kind of attach that person to that place and what comes of that identity. Names also carry much more meaning than just the linguistic word origin or the core meaning of the word, but also the story of that name has meaning for the family and the parents. So my older daughter, Kirsten Isabel, was named for my best friend in college, and she unfortunately was killed in a car accident my senior year of college, right before we graduated. And I always loved her and wanted to honor her and pass her name along to my daughter. And the thing that's so interesting, and I know it might sound strange, but I feel like Kirsten carries some of the best qualities of my friend, Kirsten, and her, because there are things about my daughter that are not reflective of my husband or myself or my parents or anyone else in my kinship group, in my family, immediate or extended. And I can only attribute that to really Kirsten, who she was named for. And then her middle name is Isabel, after my grandmother. And my name, I am assuming this is true, my mother's never... I don't know if we ever had a long conversation about it, but my name, Elizabeth, was after both of my grandmothers. My mom's mother was Elizabeth, and my dad's mother was Isabel, so I got Elizabeth. But it's funny because my children were horrified to find out there was a bracelet that was passed down by my grandmother, and it had, you know, remember those charm bracelets that have the heads of all the grandchildren and children with their initials. And so my grandmother had this, and it, you know, generations of her children and our generation and all my cousins. And on the bracelet, there was one that said DEW. And my girl's like, what is that? And I said, well, that's actually me, because my name originally was Diane Elizabeth, and they both felt somehow betrayed that they had never known this, that somehow that I'd been named something else when I was first born was news that they should have had, and somehow they felt they didn't know me as well. I mean, in kind of a ha-ha way, but it was shocking for them to know that my name was not always Elizabeth. The tradition of giving children the name of a parent, you know, the passing along of a name from generation to generation, is called patronym. And generally, it's names of the son after the father being passed along. And traditionally, this was kind of a sign of acknowledgement of loyalty to the Lord, or the Lord of the family, or the head of the family. The patronym was actually a sign of being originally from the upper class. The upper classes were the ones that would pass along those first names. And then this practice spread out over the countrysides, over different classes for many generations. But then it started to phase out by the 1960s, this practice of naming a son after their father, because the 1960s was the era of individualism. And as you can imagine, right, all the revolutions that are happening at that time. So the new generation, in an effort to rebel against their parents' traditions, broke away from the idea of patronyms and started coming up with their own names. Our number is 805-781-3875 to be part of the conversation. Carson, start us off. What's on your mind today?
I just wanted to give a little quick story about how I got my first name.
Okay.
Well, my great-grandfather was abandoned as a child. His father left him and his mother died, so I guess he wasn't really abandoned by his mother. But he had to go to work at the Carson Hill Gold Mine, which is up near Yosemite in Angels Camp. And so from about the age of 10 on, he was working his way up and eventually became the president of the gold mine.
Wow.
And he was the one that struck the final golden rivet that they used to complete the Golden Gate Bridge. So
wow.
I guess by my parents naming me Carson, it kind of kept that story alive. And that's pretty much the only reason I know the story.
So how has it impacted you carrying this weighty name, this name of historical value to your family?
Oh, I guess I've just always really been interested in my family history. We go back in the Americas for, I guess, since the founding of Pennsylvania, since I guess before America was even a country. So I just have always taken a big interest in my family, and I guess my name probably has a lot to do with that.
And so do you think you'll pass along this name and story? Oh, I'm sad I lost you, Carson. You can call back if you want. Because I'm curious to know if you are interested in passing along that name to the next generation. And how do we decide whether to pass along that name? Talking about the 1960s, that era of individualism, you know, that rebellion against the old traditions, things were kind of blowing up all over. And according to some research that was done by Today's Parent, the field of therapy actually played a big role in that breaking of the chain of generational naming, because there was a greater interest at that time, coming into the 1960s, in the emotional well-being of children. And the idea that it was best to give children something that was unique to them, right? Give children a name, an identity that was unique to them. And so you saw kind of the whole field of naming spread out, and books coming out with different names and different name origins, and, you know, people kind of sharing old family names. I remember when my sister and I were looking for names for our children. My mom, you know, pulled out kind of the family history to go back generations to see the different family names that had been passed along. And then here we are, you know, 50 plus years later, And the children and grandchildren of that individualist movement are now naming their children kind of as an act of self-expression, that instead of paying as much attention to actually what that name says about their child, their hopes, their dreams, their values, you know, who they hope that child becomes, we see parents quite often now naming their children more as a reflection of themselves, the parents, their desire to feel unique, their desire to have a brand in coming up with a name that's really unique for their child. And I think that's following the trend of celebrities and their, you know, desire to choose really unique names that stand out. So today, baby naming is a full-on competitive sport. You know, parents really take the whole idea of how they're going to name their children seriously. And you can actually hire professional consultants, branding consultants, to help you choose a name that will be really unique for your child. So what do you think about that? What is it about this whole thing of naming and how we identify ourselves? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of our conversation today. Joseph, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. So just a couple things. I kind of go by three different names.
Okay.
Kind of because of my dad was born in the 60s, and he was named after Ricky Nelson, the first teen idol.
Okay.
And so then my mother gave birth to me when she was 18, and she was on the East Coast, grew up out here in California. But I think she was afraid Marine Corps dad might not come back or something, so she named me after him. So, which he did come back. He raised me, good father. But, you know, me and my family have very different ideas, and I didn't want to go by RJ anymore and was living in Central America, and people in Spanish-speaking countries have a tough time saying RJ. So I decided to call myself Joseph, and just kind of on the spot, and I've been that ever since. But then I have another group of friends that are my band friends, and they all call me Ricky Joe, and that's kind of my stage name, but that's kind of stuck too. So I've got, you know, three different names that I kind of go into at different times depending on whom I'm around. I don't feel enough attachment to any one of them to correct anyone and go, no, this is my name forever and always. I kind of like the idea of, you know, these names representing different times of my life that are all still part of me, and who I truly am is not really tied to the name.
Is there kind of a different, I don't want to say different personality, make you sound like you're dissociated, but is there a different vibe in you depending on which name seems to be, you know, present at the time or the group that you're with?
Well, of course with the group that I'm with, yeah, I think so. I think whoever we're around kind of affects maybe not how we see ourselves, but just how we see the moment that we're in. Mm-hmm. And the moment that I'm in with my old friends from high school who I've known forever is a different history than, you know, people that I know from other countries and people that I know from playing in bands and people that I know from work. And then also having, it's almost like the name that I'm being called kind of recalls in myself the history that I've had with these different people. Mm. And then, for example, if someone's calling me Ricky, I must be at the DMV or something, and that's just bad.
And do you think you'll pass along any iterations of your name to the next generation?
Definitely not a first or middle, but I could see a last. I do agree with kind of the absence that men can feel themselves in creation. And, you know, I never name anything except for things that I'm very close to, like instruments or vehicles. Mm. And it is such a, like, man kind of reverse, I don't know. Yeah, I need some time to think on that. I think it's a funny thought, and I completely agree with it. Well, it is such a man-dominant, like, oh, I must name this.
Yes.
Kind of thing.
So that people will know I existed.
Exactly, yeah.
Goes back to the earliest graffitis of Kilroy was here back in World War II.
right.
Well, Joseph, thank you for calling. I appreciate your family story.
Hey, thank you.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. And today we're talking about the uniqueness of our names and what that story of our name says about us or does not say about us. How do you feel about the name you have? Some people choose to go with another name as they get older, maybe take a different name. In many Native American cultures, you are named by attributes that you have or the goals or desires for attributes that you might take on as you grow older, and that the naming of individuals is very sacred piece of a child's development. In Western culture, there's three kind of basic reasons that we choose names. The first is to honor someone that's close to us, a relative, a friend, or a famous person, like Joseph mentioned, Ricky Nelson. I have friends that were named after characters in books that their mother was reading at the time that they were born, or a character in a movie that they saw and really liked. And then there was a lot of children, depending on who was in power at that time, you know, a lot of Johns. During the era of John F. Kennedy, you know, depending on who is in power, those names become very popular. We also tend to choose names because the name translates to something that feels special to the parent, and they want to pass that special meaning down to their child for them to carry. And then finally, the choice of the name is to provide a sense of uniqueness in the world, a sense of having something that sets you apart from other people. I think about my second child, Kelly. Her name means warrior, and I liked the name, and I liked what it stood for, and I always thought, well, I'd love to have a strong child. And it's interesting how her name has been so powerfully attached to who she is, and how Kirsten's name so powerfully attaches to who she is. And it's, I think, easier for a parent to see those attributes in their children than to see them in yourself, the naming. You know, if I look at my brother and my sister and myself, I don't really see our names as having any unique significance to who we are. But from my perspective as a mother, the naming was very important to me. Our number is 805-781-3875. Steve, thanks for waiting. What's your story?
Hi. Yes, my name is Bird, B-Y-R-D. Okay. And then the name Bird, we've been able to trace it back in my family to the early 1000s. And then it was Le Brid in the north of France near Normandy. And then they came across in the Norman invasion to England in 1066. My ancestor at the time, who Hugo Le Brid was the madrigal and singer to the king, to William the Conqueror. Wow. And then that was one of the reasons why they flipped the Le Brid to Bird when they came into the English speaking world. And also because they were from a department in France named Wies. And then Wies is the first syllable of the word for bird in French, which is Le Oiseau. And then they often named people after where they were from mm-hmm. in those days before they commonly used last names. So the where he was from was sounded a lot like Bird mm-hmm. when they translated it from French into English. But I do want to say that my first two names, Stephen and Lee, Stephen, came from my maternal grandfather. Maternal great-grandfather, who was one of the founders of Portland, Oregon in the mid-1800s, J.B. Stevens. So I really have a maternal side to my name and also a paternal side. Mm-hmm. And then my middle name, Lee, is the name of my maternal uncle and my maternal grandfather. So actually, I have two maternal names and one paternal name, and then I just want to say also that I just got back from Mexico just less than a week ago, and in the Spanish speaking all over the Spanish speaking world, it is common to have two last names, mm-hmm. one paternal last name and one maternal last name, and I think that's the solution to the whole problem. It's just to have two for everybody to have two last names. In fact, I was even filling out some forms in Mexico, and they would not process the forms online unless you put in a maternal last name.
Wow.
And your paternal last name. You know, even though I don't use my maternal last name, you know, my mother's maiden name, very much here, I had to put it in anyway, because it was required on the online form. So I think that's just the answer to the whole thing, is just to take on the custom of the Spanish speaking world.
Yes.
You know, that it's only really in the English speaking world where we have this, where we've developed this custom, before of mainly taking paternal last names.
It's true. I appreciate that. And I keep imagining what happens. Thank you for calling in. Once you combine matrilineal and patrilineal names, the paternal and maternal names, but then when you get married, then you add a third name and a fourth name. And I think then you might have this beautifully long melodic name after a few generations. I don't know. I think anything that gives us a sense of status and a sense of grounding and a sense of connectedness is important in our names. And I can hear the pride in your voice. Our number is 805-781-3875. I'm nervous about trying to pronounce your name. Is it Olks?
Olkar.
Olkas. Thank
Olkar
you.
Olkar with an R.
Okay, Olkar. Oh, gotcha.
Yes.
Tell me your story.
I'm originally born and raised in Afghanistan. I came to Santa Cruz to go to Cal Poly, but my name is actually a Turkish name. Mm. And my dad was obsessed with a Turkish background. And I didn't know he had any background until recently I did the DNA test, and I found out actually he did have 20% Turkish. And he picked all his kids' names, like a whole artist, musicians, something very meaningful to him was name was everything. The way you present yourself is your name.
Yes.
And he named me the hardest name ever, so nobody pronounces right. Even my own husband had hardest time. So it's been interesting, but name definitely means a lot. Now, since we've been married almost 9 years, and my husband took my last name too, so we both combined our name together
mm-hmm.
with a hyphenate, and it's a long last name, but I do not mind. Since I have daughters, and I really want my daughters to understand that meaning something, because my last name means a lot more than just anything, because coming from a culture where my dad had no last name because he was very poor and orphan, and my mom did have a last name, but over time they did develop together a name that everyone called them Butter, and now it became my last name. But when we decided to choose my last name, because I didn't really not have a last name, and I talked to my dad, and my dad said, who makes you more connected to anyone? Like, basically, your mom raised you, we take care of you, who you are today is how you feel. And I, right before I came to the United States, I had to pick a last name, you know, in a mm-hmm. passport. They didn't want you to have a last name.
Yes.
Before, nobody cared about last name. And so all of a sudden, I had to come up with a last name. And then I had to go through, like, what last name really means. And Batu was the only one that stand out for me, because that means brave, that means strong. And my mom was very brave and strong that she got this last name by people calling her brave. And slowly became my dad's last name, and eventually become all family's last name.
Mm. Creating a history.
Yes.
And so how
my daughters are definitely daughters.
Yes, I was say, it's, I can hear your pride that this name is going to be carried on in your daughters as well.
Oh, yeah. They can tell. Whenever they say about themselves, they always put themselves first. I'm Butter Cosgrove.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for taking the time to call. I love your family story.
Thank you.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX, and today we're talking about names and naming, and where did those names come from? Do you know the origin story of your family name or your surname? We'd love to have you be part of the conversation, 805-781-3875. We're going to take a quick break, get organized, and come back and take your calls. maybe we'll take a little longer, Tyler. I think I was fascinated. I think we'll take a car real quick and we'll come back. All right, Mary, thank you for waiting. Or is it Charles? Who do I have?
This is Charles.
Hey, Charles. How are you?
I'm doing fine. In the amount of time that I've been listening now, I've come up at least 3 or 4 different stories about names on mine, so I'll have to pick one. But my last name is complicated and difficult to spell for people. And that's because the German immigrant 4 generations back tried to Americanize it and Americanized it differently than whatever his cousins or brothers had done. Mm-hmm. So that means anybody who has my last name is limited in descendants and cousins because there's only, 4 generations between us and the first one. So I kind of like that it's unique. If I do meet anybody with that name, I just go, we must be cousins.
Yes.
And then, that affected the way my parents gave us first name. They said, listen, if the last name is complicated, difficult to spell, you have to explain it to people. We're going to make sure the first names are at least generic, easy, nobody will ever have to worry about how to spell them. So I ended up with Charles, and it has absolutely no meaning or link to anybody. It got complicated pretty quickly because they said, yes, but we'll call him Chuck,
right,
or something. And so now I have two identities, and I think a lot of people do. And for some people, when I say my name is Charles, they look at me funny because they'd never heard that before, but they knew me as Chuck. Mm-hmm. But other people, vice versa. So that it's Charles when it's in writing, for sure, driver's licenses, doctor's records. But everybody in person, or if I introduce myself, it's Chuck. So for a long time when I was a kid, the only time I ever heard Charles was in the dentist's office when they said, Charles, you're next. And
yes.
It's like almost had kind of this grim, you're next in the dentist chair.
Right.
So anyway, so then when my children were ready to be named, just between my wife and I, we tried to come up with names that had no meaning to us. And that can be difficult, too. As you mentioned earlier in the show, the name Judy had a negative connotation for you.
Yes.
So, sorry, that's out. Mm-hmm. Can't use that one. And so we came up with names that we couldn't think of anybody we knew that was related to it.
Well, and it's interesting. Thank you for calling, Charles. I appreciate it because it reminds me of the naming piece within families about gathering names, that you have to be the first person to say, hey, I'm going to use Isabel for my daughter so my sister couldn't grab that. Or, for my brother, it's funny how we get very competitive about what names we're going to use for our children. Or if one of our friends uses one of the names that was kind of on our list, all of a sudden that isn't in play anymore. And I had mentioned earlier that we've become very competitive about trying to be the most unique and the most original with our children's names, something that's going to help them stand out. And it's just how things kind of shift generation to generation. Thank you for calling. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. We are taking your calls at 805-781-3875, talking about names and how they work for us or maybe work against us. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be right back.
Some gal would giggle and I'd turn red, and some guy'd laugh and I'd bust his head. I tell you, life ain't easy for a boy named Sue. But I grew up quick and I grew up mean. My fist got hard and my wits got keen. Roamed from town to town to hide my shame. But I made me a vow to the moon and stars, I'd search the honky-tonks and bars and kill that man if give me that awful name. Well, it was Gatlinburg in mid-July, and I'd just hit town and my throat was dry. Thought I'd stop and have myself a brew. At an old saloon on a street of mud, there at a table dealing stud, set the dirty mangy dog could name me Sue. When I knew that snake was my own.
Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. What does your name mean to you? Mary, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. What's your story?
Well, I have kind of a clever story, I guess. There was 11 years between my older sister and me. And
my mother and my, you know, father just never were going to have kids. And just before my mom found out she was pregnant with me, they were thinking about adopting, and it was going to be a boy. And so then she gets pregnant with me, and so they've got this whole thing in their head. They're going to have a boy. And I was going to be named after two priests.
Yeah.
James Patrick. James was going to be the first name, and William Keith. So I was going to be James Keith. And then I became a girl.
Yeah.
And so my grandmother said, well, nobody's ever taken my mother's name, which was Mary Ellen. And a year and a half later, my aunt had a boy, and she took James Keith, like you were saying,
yes.
Commandeering names.
Yes, commandeering.
So, but what we found out later, which was very interesting, was James Patrick's mother, her name was Mary. Her first name was Mary, Louise. William Keith's mother's name was Teresa Ellen. So I ended up with Mary Ellen after two priests' mother's names without even knowing it. It was kind of clever. The other part was, is my mom wanted to name me after my father's sister, but in the Jewish tradition, you don't name people after people who are living.
Yes.
And so nobody could ever say, you know, that I was named after Aunt Mary. But that was just a fun little story. when I was growing up, I hated it because growing up, you know, there was the Mary Ellen jams and jellies.
Yes.
I always felt like I was named after a jelly jar.
Yeah, it's interesting how those things carry on with us. And I love the synchronicity of how the names all came into play anyway. Like that, I believe yes. Nothing is an accident. You were meant to be Mary Ellen, and so here you are.
Yes.
Thank you for calling in. I appreciate it.
Okie dokes.
This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Michelle, you're on the air. What's your story?
My story is that I myself was born with and raised with a hyphenated last name. Our family name was Howard hyphen Lester, as in L-E-I-C-E-S-T-E-R, as in England. And growing up, it was impossible for people to pronounce. And when I went on to have children, my own children, and I remarried, my Howard became part of my middle name. And I maintained Lester and then hyphenated it with my last name, my current last name. And both of my daughters have a hyphenated last name, because I feel it's important for them to have the maternal and paternal names, as we do in some countries in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then all of our family, we all have five names in our family, a first name, two middle names, and then a hyphenated last name. And the same applies to them. And I believe that the girls and my children and the next generation should have, you know, that link to their heritage on both sides of the family.
So what happens when your daughters get married? Do you see at some point they'll have 10 names?
No, I don't necessarily believe in a woman taking a husband's name.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been a big proponent of why do you need to lose your identity when you marry
mm-hmm.
and take on a man's name. And if they should choose to, I mean, they can always take their, you know, the first part of their last name and use it as a middle name or an initial. Is what I did, because I actually have three middle names. So it turned into an initial in the middle of my names.
It starts to become just kind of it's a poem. Your name becomes a poem unto itself.
It does.
Yeah.
And it makes it hard for a lot of government papers because they're not used to having all these middle names.
Oh, that's true. It is. And some of the research I did, looking at the different ways of doing naming and, you know, attaching different names to children, one of the downsides throughout all the research said that the government is just not set up. The bureaucracy is not set up to deal with creative naming. So we can be as creative as we want. Yeah, but we are limited. Michelle, thank you for calling in. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And George, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, I was just going to share our naming decision for our sons. My wife wasn't going to change her name. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So what we came up with, as you heard in the previous caller, we came up with using four names, and we alternated last names.
Okay.
And we decided that the first last name would be the one that had the least chance of carrying on, which happened to be my wife's last name because she came from a family of all girls, and I came from a family of a lot of boys. So what we did was we took my last name and made it one of the middle names, and then we alternated family names in the first two spots. So that's kind of how we worked it out, and then they can decide. So both my sons have both our last names somewhere in their name.
Yeah, so how do you imagine it going into the next generation?
Well, you know, that'll be their call, but it is their name, and they have their family, their immediate family in their name, and they can do the same with their kids with their immediate family, and that shifts over time.
Yeah, it does. So, well, and we have such different, you know, traditions. Our Western idea of family has shifted over the last 50 years and how we identify who we are connected to. You know, we just kind of keep morphing that. We're no longer part of kind of this patriarchal idea that children are the property of their father and the wives as well. And so ever since then, it's kind of freed up this whole creative way of creating families and identity.
Yeah. And I think everybody has to kind of approach that as it makes sense to them individually and as a couple. I mean, I remember at that first setup, it was interesting that story how you talked about you had another name that your kids didn't know about.
Yes.
It was when I was talking with my mom about our firstborn coming and how we were kind of working with the name thing, but we were just doing the traditional first, middle, last. She reminded me, I had like five names in my birth certificate. And that sort of light went on for us, and we said, if we just add another middle name, they each will have both of our last names in their name, and we can alternate the first two spots with other family names from both sides, and that's what we did.
Our first son,
his first name ended up being my mom's maiden name, because he could do that. It was Clark.
That works beautifully. I know I really enjoy the creativity, how people think about and name their families, because it does have a lot of impact on how we feel about ourselves moving forward. George, thank you for sharing your family story. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and we're talking about naming and what our names mean to us. Do you like your name? Are you happy with how this all worked out? Do you have an origin story about your name that is important to you? Our number is 805-781-3875 to be part of the conversation. And Jane, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I just appreciated that this is named. And I have an unusual last name, Granskog, which is my grandparents. My dad's parents came over from Finland. And it translates as spruce. And I really like it. Mm-hmm. And I identify with the whole family tradition on that. But what is also amazing is, as it turns out, been here on the Central Coast for about 5 years, and heard something about that there is a possibility that I might have relatives here. Sure. And had a contact, and it turns out that my great-grandfathers had 11 kids, and the youngest of them was Herman, who came over to the States and is now buried in Los Osos Valley Cemetery with his wife.
So you ended up in a place where your ancestors had already settled.
Yes, and most of my ancestors had settled in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. But it was unusual, and the only way I found out about this is that my chiropractor happens to be Latter-day Saints and does a lot of ancestry work in what they call cemetery crawls, and was able to find out and see the gravestones and copied them off and then researched it and presented it to me. And the lovely thing about it is that he presented it to me right at Halloween, which is also All Saints Day, which is when they honor the passing of ancestors. So I was able to go out to the cemetery and pour a little vodka on the graves of Herman and Esther.
That is a great story. Thank you, Jane, for sharing it. Enjoy your day. So our names, what do they mean to us? 805-781-3875. Bruce, I think you'll get their last word today. What's in your mind?
Well, I kind of have an interesting story. So my grandfather, in World War I, his last name was Ditto.
Okay.
And he became embarrassed or agitated because everyone would say, all the soldiers would say, I want to have a beer, you know, and they would say, ditto, ditto. So basically, they made fun of him and they teased him to the point where he came back from World War One. He changed his last name to Miller.
Did he really?
He changed his name. So I am my father is the first Miller, and I am the second Miller. And I just have really mixed feelings. I have no connection to the name, you know? So I always, you know, and it costs money. I always wanted to change my name back to Ditto, but then I would be the only Ditto in my family because no one else did that. None of my siblings did it. And so when he passed away, my grandfather, he passed away, he had no ID on him. And so when my father and my uncle went to identify the body, they had them pull down his pants because on his thigh, he had tattooed Ditto.
Wow.
The name that he didn't want is the name that they identified him with, and it wasn't the name. His name was Miller at that time. He had changed his name to Miller.
So it seems he might have always had a little bit of regret of letting go of that identity.
They didn't remove tattoos back then.
That too.
I don't know, but it's really... You know, and so my kids, my friends, you know what? I didn't find out till I was probably in college, high school or college, the story. You know, my father didn't talk, so I never knew the story until somebody brought it up at a family gathering, and we all just kind of leaned in and said, what?
Mm-mm.
You know, that we, you know, and to me, it's a cool name.
Yeah.
You know, now I'm a Miller. I'm a dime a dozen. And, I mean, how many Dittos do you know? I don't know a single Ditto.
I've never met one. And so you would think
exactly.
It would be interesting to reintroduce that name somehow into your family tree, into your family system.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it would be nice, you know, to do that. I probably should have had my children's middle name be Ditto or something.
Yeah, well, it's never too late. You know, you can change that name at any time. And you can also, you know, redo that tattoo. Bruce, thank you for being a great last call today. This has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast or shows. Send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can follow us on our Instagram, elizabeth_TRT, or follow us on Facebook. As always, thank you for being part of this conversation and part of the community. I'll be back next week. Thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
a song of songs. Sing it out. Say it's wrong.
Sing, 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 sing.
Yeah. Yeah. Call a sign in the dead of the night. And the sun gonna rise in the sky. Touch a man who can't walk upright.